In early 2024, I partially ruptured my triceps tendon while doing something extremely athletic, standing up from my office chair. Reckless, I know. Ironically, I was standing up to do one of my many daily movement snacks, an injury prevention strategy. I guess I should have stayed put. I'm hardly alone. I've heard plenty of stories over the years of tendons that ruptured with seemingly no provocation, stepped off a curb, reached into the back seat, caught a falling coffee mug, sneezed hard. Partial ruptures like mine are probably even more common, but often go undiagnosed. A partial rupture is less dramatic than a full rupture, of course. It's like the difference between a stress fracture and a complete break. But I could feel it tearing. An awful sensation, a wet, shuddering, giving way, almost like I could feel individual fibers of my tendon breaking. It felt just like the last time I definitively tore some connective tissue. That was a coracoclavicular ligament rupture, a sports accident back in the mid-2000s. It's a very memorable sensation. I didn't curse, I just groaned and rolled my eyes and sighed the sigh of the defeated. I've already endured so many insults like this. What's one more? But perhaps I should have cursed, because it turned out that this injury was probably the tip of a much more disturbing iceberg. This tendon tear was, drumroll please, quite possibly a drug side effect. Say what now? Yeah, you heard that right. Tendon rupture as the side effect of a medication. A side effect which I had never heard of before, despite my expertise, despite even knowing about other drugs that do this. This episode continues on a new theme of hidden sources of tissue fragility and digs deep into tendinopathy induced by drugs, especially the statins for high cholesterol. How does that even work? And is it truly happening, or are the drugs innocent? The goal here is practical awareness without fear-mongering. When tendons suffer and fail, meds should be on the short list of suspects. I'm Paul Ingram, and this is the Pain Sci Updates podcast, the audio version of my longer blog and newsletter posts. I pretty much just read them into the microphone, generally one take only. This was first published, this episode, for awesome members. That's my top tier members, the people paying extra just because. I sent that out to them only via email back in 2022, quite a while ago now. But now this much more polished and referenced version is debuting for everybody. Alternate versions of it are now serving as new chapters in two of my books, both of the runner's knee books about IT band syndrome and patellofemoral pain. It's also in my guide to Achilles tendonitis, that one, not a full book yet, but maybe someday. I was tempted to paywall this, but I think it's got high public service announcement value, so I'm keeping it free. Of course, the audio version that you're listening to is members only, because all the audio versions are still members only. It's 100% still just a member's perk. Tendons and other connective tissue as metabolic constructs. To understand how a drug could ever mess with your tendons, you have to grok that tendons are chemistry. Our bodies constantly make and maintain tendon tissue, its proteins dancing to the tune of dizzyingly complex biomechanical algorithms. Tendons, ligaments, cartilage, and fascia, our gristle, are not just dumb bioplastic. They are biologically busy, always changing, reacting, adapting. They're the dynamic, constant output of a delicate physiological balance between being built up and torn down. More generally, our bodies constantly make connective tissue of all kinds, and that also includes bone, cartilage, fat, and even blood. It's not an intuitive category. More about this in a moment. All anatomy is made of molecular bricks, and the molecules are managed by metabolism. And what can be made can be unmade. What is managed can be mismanaged. What is delicately balanced metabolically can be knocked off balance. Now, what about fat and blood being connective tissue? In the science of tissue, histology, Adipose tissue is uncontroversially classified as a specialized connective tissue, a subtype of loose connective tissue. Seemingly stranger still, blood is also traditionally classified as a highly specialized connective tissue because it derives from mesenchyme and it consists of cells embedded in an extracellular matrix, plasma. So basically, even looser connective tissue. That cells in a matrix thing, that's the common denominator. This is orthodox textbook stuff, not a fringe view. But the classification of blood as connective tissue is nerdy and technical, and few clinicians and biologists think of it that way outside histology, and some modern texts downplay or sidestep the label for blood because it lacks fibers in situ, and fibrin appears only during clotting. So it's definitely unintuitive, but also definitely histologically correct that fat and blood are connective tissue. And it's important in this context because it means that there are a lot of non-obvious things affected by things that affect connective tissue. Worse living through chemistry. Prior to my own tendon tear, I had only been aware of a single drug that rather notoriously interferes with connective tissue metabolism and causes significantly elevated rates of tendonitis and tendon rupture. And yet, I wasn't fearful because that was not the drug I was taking. There are, it turns out, multiple drugs linked to increased rates of tendon rupture. How many surprising tendon ruptures are these drugs collectively causing? There's no way to know, but we can safely assume it's quite a few. The drugs are so common that even rare side effects will turn up, and not all of these side effects are rare. So this isn't a particularly exotic hazard. But it's also not a settled medical question. The guilt of some of these drugs hasn't been proved beyond a shadow of a doubt, although there is an awful lot of justified suspicion. Other drugs, meanwhile, are definitely guilty. Beware the fluoroquinolones. Fluoroquinolones, drugs like Cipro, are a class of antibiotics with particularly nasty and diverse side effects. But the most infamous fluoroquinolone affliction, a 2.5 times greater risk of Achilles tendonitis than the average healthy person, and a 4 times greater risk of Achilles tendon rupture. Jeebus. This is not an unsettled medical question. There has been an FDA black box warning about these drugs since 2008, strengthened several times since. These drugs are, quote, associated with disabling and potentially permanent serious side effects that can involve the tendons, muscles, joints, nerves, and CNS. The UK also updated their warnings about fluoroquinolones in early 2024. While not actually banned, their prescription is now more aggressively discouraged and, quote, they should only be used when other commonly recommended antibiotics are inappropriate. They're not pulling any punches. Here's a longer quote from the UK. Systemic and inhaled fluoroquinolones are associated with risks of serious, disabling, long-lasting, and potentially irreversible adverse reactions estimated to occur in at least between 1 in 10 people in every 10,000 who take a fluoroquinolone. These may affect multiple body systems and include musculoskeletal, nervous, psychiatric, and sensory reactions. These adverse reactions have been reported in patients irrespective of their age and potential risk factors. If you took fluoroquinolones within several months before you developed Achilles tendonitis or had a rupture, suspicion is justified. If you have Achilles tendonitis now, please politely question that prescription before you accept it. It could make a bad situation much worse. And of course, there are other tendons. This example emphasizes how tendons are complex living things that can be poisoned. This phenomenon is one of the cooler, crazier examples of how musculoskeletal medicine is more about biochemistry than biomechanics. And there are other drugs with the same concern, and extremely common ones at that, and I had no idea in 2024 that I was taking one of them. I was taking cholesterol-lowering drugs, specifically a statin. Probably tendinopathy isn't the only hazard. Here's a little informed speculation. Any drug that can harm tendons can probably harm other things. Connective tissue is important and widely used anatomical scaffolding, and when you tinker with its biology, you are going to affect many systems. Tendon trouble is probably just the most obvious effect. And we see that with the fluoroquinolones, which are known to cause neuropathy as well as tendinopathy. There's no way of knowing for sure whether the damage that causes tendinopathy and rupture is the tip of an iceberg of more widespread or lasting effects. It's unlikely to be serious for long, but it could be, unfortunately. And that is really terrible for anyone, but it's an especially unwelcome complication in the life of anyone who already has some unexplained chronic pain or illness. Statin myopathy and more. So I have familial hypercholesterolemia. That is a genetic disorder that makes livers pump out extra cholesterol. Quite a lot of it in my unusually severe case, lucky me. People with FH dominate the stats for cardiovascular disease. When a seemingly healthy person drops dead from a stroke or heart attack at age 50, it was probably one of us. You can't improve the FH lipid profile with any amount of diet or exercise, although a healthy lifestyle may still be protective. Good fitness probably does protect people with FH, regardless of their lipid levels, even when LDL is still high, not controlled with medication. A healthy lifestyle is linked to a lower risk of heart attacks and strokes. This is both plausible and partially supported by the evidence. But that evidence also isn't anywhere near good enough. It's all observational so far. Certainly, there are no randomized controlled trials that are randomizing FH patients to intensive lifestyle intervention with hard outcomes. We don't even have small mechanistic studies to confirm that people with super high cholesterol can still get all of the well-known measurable short-term health benefits from exercise. I think we can say that some protective effect is likely, but its power is just unknown. It could be quite modest compared to statins and PCSK9 inhibitors. Until we know, we can assume that lifestyle is probably protective and certainly worthwhile for all kinds of other reasons, but it probably isn't protective enough to pass on lipid-lowering drug therapy. So until there's better data on that, to be sure of reducing the risk, you do need some drugs. The statins have been the major evidence-based treatment option since the mid-1990s. I first tried them in early 2024. I had long suspected that statin therapy was in my future, and I was well aware of how notorious they are for causing muscle pain. Many people are aware of that. Statin myopathy is controversial because there's good evidence that its severity has been exaggerated. But that same evidence, literally the same evidence, is equally clear that the side effect does exist, and it's not particularly rare, at least 5% of people who take statins. So there's doubtless a range of severity, but even mild chronic muscle pain for many years is not a trivial symptom. Any amount of pain is significant when it's multiplied by years. So perhaps unsurprisingly, weird muscle pain comes with other adverse effects, but I had no idea of this when they were first prescribed to me. I got the statin myopathy, and it was distinctive and nasty. My cardiologist seemed to fully appreciate that I had good cause to be worried about adding a side effect like that to my long history of complex body pain. Would I even be able to detect the signal in all that noise? But I needn't have worried about missing the signal. About 10 days after starting, I developed a clear new muscle aching, unlike anything I've ever experienced before, which is really saying something. The chronic pain problems I've had since 2015 are kaleidoscopic in character. But pain comes in more flavors than ice cream, and this new pain was definitely unfamiliar. That side effect alone was a deal breaker for me. I stopped taking the drug, and the weird aching of statin myopathy quickly eased. But then, despite the stoppage, my tendons started aching and burning and twinging, and a few weeks later I felt like I had mild tendonitis in a half dozen places. I also noticed a freakish surge in joint popping. Oddly, none of this made me suspicious. This new pattern of symptoms didn't even register as particularly noteworthy, let alone a possible side effect. Why not? Well, first, I had just been through a whole lot of holiday distractions, and I simply hadn't been paying that close attention. Second, unlike statin myopathy, these were not distinctive symptoms for me. As just mentioned, my many common symptoms are pretty kaleidoscopic, and I've always been prone to tendonitis and joint popping, so I interpreted their increase as a rough patch, more extreme, but all too familiar. Business as usual. And third, statins are known for causing muscle pain, not so much for tendonitis, and I wasn't even still taking a statin, so I also wasn't still thinking about statin side effects. Silly me. And then, one day, I pushed myself out of my chair to take an exercise break, and rip, my triceps tendon shredded just a little bit. Which is when I finally learned that all the statins might also be tendon wreckers, the same infernal thing as the fluoroquinolone antibiotics, but for a much more widely used drug family. This side effect is less well documented than statin myopathy and probably rarer. Despite the rarity, discovering evidence of this phenomenon was enough to make my blood run cold, the most startling consult I've ever had with good old Dr. Google. The overall volume of evidence on this topic is impressive, citations coming soon. Even weeks after my last pill, it was clear that statins might be to blame. I did not take rosuvastatin for long, and not for several weeks before the injury, so is a delayed effect possible? It does cast some doubt on the side effect story, but we already know that such delays are standard with the fluoroquinolones. Those drugs are rarely taken for longer than a couple of weeks at a time, and yet they can rupture a tendon up to a year later. And there are also other known serious related side effects that can be permanent. And it's generally plausible that altered tendon metabolism might take a while to corrode a tough tendon. Unfortunately, I think the delay doesn't mean much. If anything, it was almost too short a period, not enough time for that damage. So I'm pretty confident that this probably was a side effect, or at least that it fits the side effect story. But that story, the science of tendinopathy and tendon rupture as a side effect, is not conclusive. Okay, it's time for some science. How about a whirlwind tour of statin tendinopathy studies? I'm going to read about 8 short descriptions of 8 studies. Sounds about as exciting as watching paint dry or grass grow, but it's not that bad. They're interesting. Some of these are quite intriguing. Some of them are alarming. All of the studies below collectively suggest, but do not prove, that statin-associated tendon problems are real, probably uncommon, biologically plausible, not limited to any single statin, and visible in case reports, animal models, and big medical data sets. So all of this is what we would expect to see for a genuine, under-recognized adverse effect. I'll start with Poulette et al. In 2007, they reported one of many case studies included here because it was just the first one I found and for this intriguing speculation about mechanism, which was the first time I'd come across it. Physiological repair of an injured tendon requires degradation and remodeling of the extracellular matrix through matrix metalloproteinases. It was hypothesized that statins may increase the risk of rupture by altering MMP activity. So MMPs are known to be inhibited by statins. These are big proteins that use metals to get their job done, which seems like a pretty badass thing for a protein to do. It's usually zinc, sometimes cobalt. So we're talking about a big protein molecule that mostly consists of the usual organic chemistry stuff, but also has an atom of zinc or sometimes cobalt. And what is their job? What are they doing with the metal? The MMPs are a big family of enzymes, so they accelerate other chemical reactions, and they manage the manufacturing and breakdown of all the usual connective tissue ingredients, your collagens and elastins, your gelatins and glycoproteins, proteoglycans, and so on. So those enzymes are inhibited by statins, and yeah, it seems like you might want to be careful inhibiting that. It does seem like there's a likely connection between inhibiting that and tendon degeneration and rupture. Okay, I'm not going to spend that long on all of them. More briefly for several more now, Rubin et al. In 2011 reported another single case study, but it was a particularly crazy case, bilateral simultaneous rupture of the quads tendon. Great, Odin's Raven. Quote, musculoskeletal complications such as pain, myositis, rhabdomyolysis, myopathies, and tendonitis are well known. But tendon rupture associated with statin therapy is rare, and it has been suggested that it may be related to the pleiotropic effect of statins on MMPs. And pleiotropy just means that the drug has a second effect that is not obviously related to its primary mechanism of action, a side effect, in other words. Marie et al. Collected 96 case reports of statin tendinopathy and 33 ruptures back in 2008. Quote, our series suggests that statin-attributed tendinous complications are rare considering the huge numbers of statin prescriptions. We suggest that prescribers should be aware of tendinous complications. Of course, this was based on reported cases, and it's extremely likely that cases are underreported. Many people would never even suspect a delayed drug-tendon link, and you have to suspect it to report it. Still, point taken, even if it is often missed, it's probably still a rare problem relative to the sheer quantity of statins being consumed. Knobloch et al. Reviewed all drug-induced tendon disorders in 2016. There are four kinds of drugs that mess with our anatomical rigging, and they discuss them all. Quote, drug-induced tendon disorders are often an often underestimated risk factor. The range of detrimental effects on the tendon include tendinopathy as well as potentially tendon rupture. Four main drug classes have been reported to be associated with potentially deteriorated tendon properties. One, corticosteroids. Two, quinolone antibiotics, mostly the fluoroquinolones. Three, aromatase inhibitors. And four, statins. Nearly every tendon of the entire body might be affected in a detrimental way by one or a combination of the aforementioned agents. In 2017, Kalia Gasoglu et al. Induced statin tendinopathy in rats, the jerks, poor rats. They used extreme dosing, notably. Quote, all the statins cause deterioration of the biomechanical parameters of the Achilles tendon. All the statins tested are associated with calcific tendinopathy risk, of which full awareness is required during everyday medical practice. Yeah, no kidding, because calcific tendinopathy is on another level. It is not your ordinary tendinopathy. It can be super nasty, gout-like in its intensity. As I have learned the hard way, about 10 years ago, I had a case of this, and I would rather put my hand in the Reverend Mother's pain box than ever do that again. Okay, just a couple more. A little bit of good news here for the first time in this set. Eliasson et al. In 2019 provided some welcome evidence that statin tendinopathy might not be lasting. That is the only such evidence I have found so far. Quote, former users of statins did not confer a higher risk of tendinopathies. Current statin use seems to increase the risk of trigger finger and shoulder tendinopathy. And finally, Quack et al., and that's not Quack as in Q-U, that's K-W-A-K, the Korean Quack. Quack et al.'s 2023 review, probably the most rigorous evidence of the existence of statin tendinopathy available to date, showing 40% more tendinopathy in Korean statin users. quote, previous longitudinal cohort studies have reported the conflicting results of the relationship between statin use and the development of tendinopathy disorder. This nationwide population-based cohort study suggests that statin use, regardless of the statin type, was associated with a greater risk of tendinopathy compared with that of non-users. So that's all quite a lot. It makes you wonder how many people are running around out there with statin-boosted tendon troubles, doesn't it? But is it the statins that are breaking tendons, or is it the metabolic disorders that statins treat? Maybe my tendon tore because I had fatty blood and not because I danced with statins. Correlations are always getting us in trouble. Tendinopathy cropping up in people who take statins could be a classic example of a link that isn't what it looks like. And we have strong evidence that tendinopathy is much more common in people with metabolic syndrome, that's obesity, dyslipidemia, and diabetes, regardless of statin usage. So maybe statins are an innocent bystander in these cases of tendinitis and rupture. Hell, maybe they were actually helping. It would be awfully ironic if we fearfully blamed statins for causing a problem that they're actually treating. I found two recent papers that push back against the statin tendinopathy story. I'll go over both of them quickly and then in more detail. First, Gillard et al. Analyzed a huge U.S. claims database and found no increased risk of tendon rupture or tendinopathy among statin users with cardiovascular disease. In fact, their risk was lower. And that result is reassuring about statin safety at large scale. But this is also low-resolution data that will miss some things, like early treatment, dose-specific, and rare effects. So it can't rule statin tendinopathy out entirely. It only confirms what was already obvious. Statins are generally quite safe, and any tendon trouble they cause just isn't severe enough to be obvious in bulk. Second, Zhu et al. Used genetic analysis, Mendelian randomization, to look for better-than-correlation evidence that statins can cause Achilles tendinopathy, and they found no causal signal. This, too, is reassuring in a general way and yet also far from proof of anything. MR tests lifelong biological proxies, not real-world drug exposure. And they only looked at one tendon. So these results weaken the statin tendinopathy claim, but they also do not kill it. Well, both of these are interesting studies. Let's look at them in a bit more detail. Gillard et al. First. So this is a retrospective observational study using a massive U.S. medical and pharmacy claims database comparing 5.6 million adults with atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease, ASCVD, to 56 million people without. Tendon ruptures and tendinopathies turned up in 3.4% of the people with ASCVD versus just 1.9% in the general claims population. The biggest risk factors for tendinopathy were age, obesity, and rheumatoid arthritis. But guess what wasn't a risk? The 67.9% of ASCVD patients on statins did not have more tendon problems. In fact, they had fewer. On its face, this could be easily mistaken for strong evidence against statins as a cause of tendinopathy. To be clear, that's not what the authors say. They frame their results as reassuring safety evidence, not as falsification of the statin tendinopathy hypothesis. In other words, their reasonable conclusion is that statin tendinopathy isn't widespread or severe, not that it doesn't exist at all. Nevertheless, this will be seized on as a blow for statin tendinopathy by many experts. If a phenomenon truly exists and matters, it generally does leave some statistical trace. But there are major caveats here. Correlations are just as fragile and misleading in their absence. There are many ways that observational data can be unobservant. For instance, this study's index date is at diagnosis, not when people started statins. Any tendon risk could easily be concentrated around starting statins or dose escalation, and this design would miss that by design and might well have. So that's probably the biggest validity challenge to the results of this study. But there's more. Exposure measurement is crude. Any pharmacy follow-up is about as fuzzy as it could possibly be. Their outcome definition is broad and shoulder-centric. There could be confounding healthy adherer effects, especially, and other unmeasured confounders, things like cholesterol levels, physical activity, socioeconomic factors. And, of course, claims data can misclassify diagnoses, and 12-month follow-up might not be enough. So that's quite a bit. This is strong evidence against a large, common, short-term increase in broadly coded tendon problems among ASCVD patients who have a statin claim. And note how specific I'm being there. Exactly this. Strong evidence for exactly, but only this. And that's how the authors put it as well. But this does not cleanly rule out early treatment effects, which are likely dose intensity effects, tendon-specific effects, or rare and idiosyncratic effects. So, in other words, it falls well short of proving that statin tendinopathy isn't a thing. Okay, let's look more closely at the genetic study now, Zhu et al., a genetic Mendelian randomization study, which used DNA-linked proxies from large genome-wide studies to test whether taking statins causes Achilles tendinopathy. MR studies can shed a bit more light on causes than observational studies can. And observational studies are famously bad at it, and MR studies are a little bit less bad at it, but only a little bit. The authors used summary data on overall statin use and four specific statins and both Achilles tendonitis and injury. And then they crunched the numbers, which is my full summary of their analysis, because almost nothing about MR analysis lends itself to a summary that anyone wants to hear. So they crunched the numbers and reported no evidence of a causal link. For what it's worth, the reverse test was also null, meaning they showed that tendinitis does not cause statin use. Good to know. And are there caveats? Of course, always. The analyses for pravastatin and rosuvastatin were underpowered. They didn't have that many genetic instruments for those, not many genetic proxies for them compared to the others. A bigger limitation is that they tested only the genetic phenotype for Achilles tendinopathy and not tendinopathy in general. Bigger still, MR weirdly tests genetic proxies for drug exposure, not actual exposure. That means it's a study of people who have the genes of someone likely to need these drugs rather than their actual drug-taking behavior. This biases MR towards detecting lifelong biological effects of statins, but away from acute, idiosyncratic, or early exposure adverse effects, which is exactly how statin tendinopathy supposedly works. And that's why my interpretation of their results is notably more cautious than the authors, who repeatedly use language like confirming the absence of a causal relationship. I don't think they've confirmed it. I think it's evidence. I don't think it confirms that there's no causal relationship. So the point of all of this digging in is that this is an extremely complicated epidemiological puzzle, and it is not solved. The bottom line is that we just don't know whether statins cause tendons to burn or break. But all we can say with confidence is that it must not be common or severe, or the puzzle would be solved by now. There will be no more statin side effects for me. I never returned to taking statins. I wanted nothing more to do with them, despite the encouraging evidence from Eliasson et al. That statin tendinopathy might not be lasting. I'm hardly convinced by that alone. Even though long-term damage may have already been done, the only thing worse than getting a serious side effect from a drug is continuing. In the aftermath of the partial rupture, it just seemed unthinkable to resume statin therapy. But I still had stupidly high cholesterol, and that's also a serious risk, undeniably more dangerous than tendinopathy, which is why I'm grateful and lucky that I didn't feel forced to choose between the devil I know and a very different devil that I merely suspect. No one should have to choose between strokes and tendon ruptures. I have been able to control my pathologically high cholesterol with a completely different kind of drug, Repatha. Rapatha isn't exactly for everyone because it's breathtakingly expensive. You do get what you pay for, however. And, of course, this is an earnest testimonial, not a paid product plug, which I would never do, even if they offered, which they don't. This drug tamed my lipid profile in a month from stupidly high to really very low. And side effects? Well, I've had none, and so far, no one else seems to have had any either. But I couldn't possibly afford this drug on my own, and Canadian taxpayers are footing the bill for mine. I'm only able to replace statins with Repatha thanks to the enlightened policies of Canadian public health insurance. The cost of Repatha is about $1,200 a month Canadian. That's roughly $900 USD right now. And compared to that, what are the costs of strokes and heart attacks? Much higher. By the way, cholesterol deniers responding to this post will be ignored with prejudice. Thanks to the cost of Repatha, many people will be forced to choose between the very clear long-term risks of untreated high cholesterol and the somewhat unclear short-term risks of statins. That dilemma sucks, and there is a risk of scaring readers with this information. Many of you are taking statins already, or you'll be offered them soon enough, and it's not going to feel great to learn that the weird aching could just be the beginning of a more serious side effect trauma. I'm always keen to avoid mongering fear, but not all discussion of risks and hazards is fear mongering. In this case, I think chronic pain patients particularly deserve to know about this side effect and the scientific discussion around it. If a patient already has unexplained pain and musculoskeletal troubles, it would be disturbingly easy to dismiss the warning signs of statin tendinopathy, just as I did until I got a rupture. But even otherwise healthy people aren't going to wonder about a connection between their cholesterol drugs and their tendons burninating. I suspect that most people would just chalk that up to aging, because most people taking statins are in that losing battle stage of life. So I'm sharing the information. Scary or not, sometimes life is scary, like when you tear a tendon getting up out of a chair. And if that happens to you or something like it, now you know that it could be related to statins. Thanks for tuning in to the Pain Sci Updates podcast. That wraps up episode number 144-ish. It's not quite an exact count for stupid technical reasons. Coming soon, I have substantial new content almost ready to go on several topics all at once. Thousands of words about referred pain, scraping massage and gua sha, surgery for trigger points, and mind over pain theories. There's a lot more in, on top of that as well, but those topics, I've got quite a lot accumulated and almost ready to go. Lots in the pipeline. Just because I haven't posted much lately doesn't mean I haven't been reading and writing. I'll be back with more ASAP.